Hey, if you are ever thought about writing a book, but then you just got stuck, what you might need is a ghostwriter. And I am here today to talk to one of my oldest friends about his ghostwriting experience with me and how that turned out for him and how he actually made a truckload of capital off of two books that really helped him get his speaking career started. So if that's something you're looking for, saddle up because it's right here on 8 Second Rule. This is 8 Second Rule, the podcast about attention-based marketing where we talk about getting, holding on to, and developing the attention of your ideal audience. You've got 8 seconds. What are you going to do with it? All right, guys, so I am here with Kelly Kay. And he and I have known each other for a minute. It's probably been close to 30 years, right, Kelly?
Something. I think so.
It's 25. Yeah, it's been a minute.
I bet it's been more than 30 years. Yeah.
Has it? You knew me before so. I was married, right?
I was a kid, but you were like one of my first heroes. So.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
Six or seven or someone I met you.
We were hanging around the same church and we did some drama stuff together and I knew his parents pretty well. And then he was always there doing stuff. And, then later we got to know each other a little better. But, in the last couple of years, Kelly looked me up because he is a traveling evangelist. He's a public speaker and, he needed to write a book and was looking for somebody. And so he messaged me and said, "Hey man, I know you do this stuff. Would you be willing to help me with one?" And so we did one. And that was, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 3 years ago.
And then the following year or so, we did a second one that came out this last year. And things have gone pretty well for him on those.
Absolutely.
Being a preacher's kid and growing up around church, I had a pretty good sense of what he was trying to do already. And since we were friends, I was able to kind of capture a little bit of his flavor in the writing too, pretty easily. So I think it turned out well. It turned out to be a good partnership.
Yeah, so Kelly, that was a huge piece for me, was you being able to know, you know, understand how I want to talk, and that worked out great.
Yeah, because I know that when you're doing your public speaking, you use a lot of vernacular and stuff, and in the writing, you kind of have to smooth that out just a little bit, but you want to keep it feeling real punchy and fresh, because otherwise it doesn't sound like you, and then nobody really who is interested in listening to you wants to read it. So tell me what happened.
Before you say, let me just tell you that's one of the compliments I get the most on people that come to see me that have read the book, and they say, "I can hear your voice when I'm reading this. Like, it sounds just like you." And I'm like, "That's awesome." So
that's cool. Well, that's because I've known you since you were 10, 11.
Yeah,
so I've kind of heard your voice develop over time, and then we reconnected, you know, later, 5-6 years ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about, remind me of the title of the first book. I mean, I know it, but
the first book was Reckless Love Revolution.
Okay, and essentially you were writing about the idea that love is the central theme of the Christian religion. And it should be practiced that way. Yeah?
Right. So just a little backstory on that. What I had learned in ministry is being a big tattooed guy with, you know, covered in tattoos and piercings, is that churches didn't want me to come and preach. And so I knew that I was going to have to find a different way to get into churches. And I realized real fast that a person couldn't get into a church, but a ministry could. So the first thing I needed was a ministry. And my wife was always paying for other people's food all the time at drive-thrus and then just driving away. And I'm like, she's doing it because she's showing the love of Jesus, but they don't know that. They just got a free meal on us, you know. And I said, if there's a way that we could just show them that Jesus loves them, you know, then, you know, that's what we'll do. And we came up with this ministry called Reckless Love Revolution, where we just handed out these cards. And they just really took off. And doors started opening and the ministry blew up. And then we had all these stories to tell, but I still wasn't getting as many speaking engagements as I want. And I thought, well, what else helps the ministry? And I said, well, a book. A book will, you know, show that, hey, this isn't just some dude wanting to come in and speak. Like, he's, you know, he knows what he's doing, and he has something behind him. So that's how it started.
Right. And that's true for just about all types of public speakers that I'm aware of, because
absolutely,
I can remember when my dad was preaching back when I was a kid, people would show up sometimes wherever he was at, you know, whatever congregation he was with, and they'd want to do a Sunday service and just show up out of the blue and be like, oh, I can preach. Oh, I can, you know, do an offering prayer, and then want you to pay them for like taking part in the service. Just random, basically, you know, travelers, and no clue who they were, no clue what their, you know, belief right. structure was, or if, you know, whatever. But, you know, they wanted to be a part of something that didn't require them to actually sweat to earn some money was the way
yeah,
I remember
sure.
it. And so I know that there's
a lot of people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of guys, honestly, who make a living as traveling speakers who are like that. They don't necessarily believe in what they say, and that's both in, you know, religious circles and in just like positive thinking and sales circles and stuff. They will just come up with something that people like to hear and start telling it. And if they're good at it, they can get away with it for a long time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So the first book, I know it took us, what, about 6 months probably to get that done?
Yeah, I think so, but that was because of me. I was kind of
right.
dragging my feet a little bit. I think that's about how long it took, yeah.
And then you were set on, we even shopped this thing around, you shopped this thing around to some publishers, ended up meeting at one of the big publishers, or thought you were going to. And then what happened from there? How come you decided not to take that route?
Well, I actually did. I did go that route. I went with a publisher who publishes a lot of really big name Christian authors, all my favorite ones actually. So I was really excited when I got the meeting and sat down with them, and I signed a contract with him. And I think it was because he already had the book done. They really didn't have to do any work. We'd already done all the work. So, you know, he sees, well, I have, you know, on social media, I had hundreds of thousands of followers at this point. And he saw that, and then he said, okay, you have a book. He said, I'll shop this around for you, and if we can't do anything, I'll publish it for you. So I was really excited, but then when no one else took it, him publishing it for me, what that really turned into was him printing it for me at a really high rate. And I didn't learn that until, you know, later. And so I was excited, but he didn't do any advertising, didn't do any promotions, didn't do anything for me. He just allowed me to buy books from him and, you know, and then resell them at my whatever cost I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And he would only sell me, you know, I'd have to buy in $1,000 or some super high increment that was really hard for me to do when I was first starting out.
Right.
So that wasn't my favorite move that I made in that, you know, with that book.
And so, but some of your backstory here is important too, because before you ended up on the public speaking circuit, you were doing trade shows. And, one of the times that you and I kind of hooked up for a little bit, you were selling a speaker. You had gone to China, right? And found a manufacturer that would put your brand on a USB rechargeable speaker that sounded approximately as good or maybe a little better than the Bose speaker that was out at the time, but was just a ton cheaper and tougher. And so you had already been through all of that. And so then I think that's probably what clued you into the fact that, hey, you didn't need this middleman dealing with a printer somewhere to put your book together for you.
And what was really hard was, like, if I wanted now to print that book through them, they've already switched so many people in their company that I tried to get 1,000 copies of it, I don't know, 6 months or so ago, and they never returned even any of my phone calls. Like, I can't even order that book myself. I can't do it because it's under his publishing company.
Does he own the copyright?
No, he doesn't own the copyright. So what I'm going to end up having to do, and we may be jumping ahead here, is just republish it myself.
Yeah.
And that's my goal right now, is to do that.
Yeah, and this is something, if you're listening to this, if I share this as a podcast, which I probably will, this is something that I've talked about quite a bit, is with this is kind of a vanity press situation that Kelly got himself into, and he didn't know it because the guy represented himself as kind of an author's agent. And so he kind of took a backdoor approach to getting Kelly hooked in, and then, you know, he ends up spending a bunch of money. And fortunately for Kelly, he did get decent quality books that he was able to sell and make some of his money back. Sometimes, though, you don't. Sometimes you end up with complete garbage, and then you're stuck.
Right.
And sometimes you'll even sign a contract to lose your copyright for several years, like 3 to 5 years sometimes.
Yeah, that didn't happen, you know, for me, thank God. And let me say, too, he did really try to help me. I know he did.
Sure.
But when you're managing these big names, who am I? You know, I wasn't worth 10 minutes of your time. So he did me some favors. But at the end of the day, it hurt me more than it helped me. But I know that wasn't his goal. So I don't want, you know, I know we haven't said any names, and I won't. But, I, you know, just at the end of the day, I don't want to say anything negative about him because he really did try.
And you never did to me either. Yeah.
Right.
It just was not a good business move.
Right. I did more than make my money back, though. I did profit on those.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to know who I am, though. If you think that I'm trying to profit off of books, that's not my goal. I probably give away more than I sell. So just, you know, if you don't know who I am, I normally take somebody with me when I speak to say, hey, your job today is not to let me give everything away, because I will.
Right.
So,
but the goal was...
That being said, I still made my money back plus some, yeah.
Yeah. Your goal was to help fund your traveling, right? And be able to keep going and doing more. Because even though you get paid to speak, it's not always as much as you would like. And sometimes the speeches that you want to give, the talks you want to give, the places you want to visit, you're out of their price range. And so you got to make decisions about that and be able to fund that stuff yourself.
Exactly. Especially when I was first starting, I didn't do contracts with anyone to come and speak. And I never even would ask for an amount. I would just say, let me come. And sometimes, you know, I'd get 500, sometimes I get 50, sometimes I get a high five. And so I knew if I had a product to sell, at least I could leave with something. You know, if somebody likes your speaking or if you're funny, they'll buy your book. And I knew that. And so that helped. A lot of times when I may not have made enough gas money, the book covered that.
Yeah. Okay, so fast forward to the second one. So we knew that you had kind of a success model going, that people liked what we had put together. They liked your style. They liked your writing. And so you came up with the concept for the second book. And about, you know, a year or two later, we got into that. And so what did you decide to do different on that second one?
The second book, I kind of had a game plan moving into it. You know, after already doing one, I knew that I didn't want a publisher. I wanted to just do it all myself. I learned just from researching before I did the book that, you know, my publisher, his price has changed a lot, and it would range between $5 to $7 a book. And then I learned pretty quick that I could actually get them from $1.80 to $3 a book, depending on, you know, the quantity that I ordered. And that right there was huge. Because when I sell the books, and I again, keep in mind, I give away a lot. So because of that, I sell them for 20. I always say 20 or whatever you want to pay. Meaning if you got $5, I'll take $5. If you got 20, I'll take 20. But that also opens the door for people to pay $100, you know, $200. And that happens a lot too. But when I'm only paying $2 a book, when I give one away, I don't feel quite as bad. Even when I know that I paid $5 to $7 for that book.
Sure.
So moving along with the second book, that was my plan. Was I knew I wanted to use you again. I wanted to go through that same process. The difference was I wanted to publish it myself.
Right. So what did you end up doing? You just went to a printer, or did you go through a publisher that offered print services?
I went through Amazon, honestly.
Okay.
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. So I turned there, and they made it really easy. They outlined it for me. I will say that building the book, you know, to be published, it's very strict. You know that. There's a lot of strict rules that you have to follow, you know, per page and per chapter, and the way the book is formatted. That took me a little while to learn. It took me about 2 months to go through that process, which I know now that you would have done that with me.
Yeah. Well, that was part of what you paid for, but it's cool.
But you know what? You know me too. And doing it myself is something that I like to do. So
no, that's great.
Once I
you
got that
something.
Down, they give you all the directions. You just follow it step by step, and then you submit it. They approve it. I ordered like 5 copies just to check them out. They were great. And then we hit the street running, man.
So now Amazon has actually updated their Kindle publishing tool to cover their paperback printing. And so the tool that they have now for building books is really easy. So the next time you go to do it, it's going to save you some time. Because the formatting is mostly automated. And all you have to do is make sure that you have got everything set up in nice paragraphs and got your, you know, I mean, as long as you are
using it,
like using Google Docs or a word processing program, you're going to be fine. And it makes it real easy because you set your margins, you set your styles, all of that, and it brings it home. And it also helps create what's called the frontispiece, that front material that goes in the front of your book with your copyright page and all that. And then also the back piece, which will promote like your next book or your previous book, or
wow.
give contact information.
Yeah, I handed all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so some of that, they're going to have templates for it in there, and it makes it really quick and easy. I just actually edited one of my books using that new tool because I was curious to see, you know, what they had improved, and it's completely revamped. So it
wow,
got real
great.
Simple, real fast. And the upload process was beautiful because once you put it into their format, then it just accepts it and it publishes within a couple of hours on the digital side. I haven't
wow.
ordered any
wow.
print books from it yet, but it's supposed to set up like all your paid, I'm going to say some stuff here that people might not know, but paid bleeds and gutters, all that stuff so that your words are positioned correctly on the page, because you know this already, but the gutter is like that part in the center of the book. And if you don't leave
right.
enough space for the margin, you think you've got the same margin as you have on the outside, but what you're missing is that when it tucks in there and it gets bound, you lose about a quarter inch or more of that page, depending on how thick your book is and what kind of paper it is. And so it needs that gutter and the margin. And so this program sets that up automatically. It takes that. I mean, if you set it up for an ebook, you can print paperback straight from that same file if you send it to Amazon. It's pretty sweet. So they just keep making it easier and easier. Now, I know their prices have also gone up a little bit, but you got those prices by ordering in bulk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can adjust the price will scale based off of how many you're ordering.
Yeah, so if you're ordering one or two books, guys out there, you're saying, well, damn, I paid like $6 or $7 for my. Well, yeah, you did because you ordered one copy, and that's okay. There's
right.
nothing wrong with that. And still, with Kelly's model, you know, if you were selling them for $20 a piece at what they call BOR or back of room, in that merch table, then you're still gonna make good money off of it. You're still like quadrupling. You know, tripling or quadrupling your money, and that's a good investment anytime. You can make four times what you spend on something. But if you can get that price down to $1.80 to $3 a piece, then it's just money all day long. And like he said, you can afford to put them on sale. You can offer specials. You can package them with a T-shirt or, you know, if you've got like downloads of your speeches and stuff that you sell to, or maybe you've got, depending on what you do, you might have like a group on Facebook that you pay for, or other coaching services and stuff like that. That's kind of one-on-one, or with you, it might be like a Bible study or something that people could get into. They pay a little bit of money to have that for their youth group or whatever. You could package that stuff up and you can sell the books really cheap on the side because it doesn't really cost you anything. You're making some money, and the more books that get out there, the more books you're going to sell the next time. So tell me, this last year I know was tough for you. What happened?
Well, I mean, I'm a full-time traveling evangelist, so if I can't preach somewhere, then we don't have any income that week. So when COVID hit, which was, I had planned to do a book tour in March and April of last year. That was right when the book was coming out, we had finished printing it. I had them, and I was booking dates, and then when the pandemic hit, everything got canceled. I mean, everything for almost a year was canceled, and we were panicking a little. I mean, I had people that were really helping us and sewing into the ministry, but had I not had that book, especially at the beginning, to offer to sell online, that's really what got us through. So that was a huge blessing that we had it right at that time. Even though it was a bummer not to do a book tour with it, we
right.
still got it out, and it provided for us. Yeah.
So what was how many copies did you actually end up starting off with?
I think the first order that I did was only 50. Oh, wait, no, the first order I did was close to 1,000.
Okay.
And then we sold most of those online.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife and I went around delivering a whole ton of them too.
Oh, yeah.
So I wouldn't have to pay for all the shipping. But yeah, so it was great.
Yeah, and that can really help a lot. I know my wife has, you know, a home business and a lot of products that she sells, and, usually about once every week or 2 weeks, we'll make a trip one afternoon, like 3 or 4 hours, just dropping them in people's, you know, mailboxes or whatever, because, you know, it's $6 or $8 a pop sometimes to send stuff. And,
absolutely.
And then God bless the United States Postal Service, but not everything always gets where it's supposed to be. So that can be expensive.
And I'll tell you that too. I don't know if you're dealing with much shipping or books, but, if you just send a book by itself, it can go as media mail,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot cheaper. It's a little less than $3 a book
for
me to mail. However, if you put a thank you note or sign the book, now it can no longer go as media mail. And once they stamp it, they have the right to open it and check it. And I've had a few books. I signed all of them and mailed them media mail anyway.
Yeah.
But I had several that never got there, and I think that's why.
Wow.
So,
I did not know that. That's crazy. I don't know why that would be the case. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Media mail, yeah, they told me media mail is simply for material only. And if you add anything to the material, then it's not strictly media. So, yeah. Wow.
I don't know why your signature wouldn't be part of the material. That's
because I altered the material.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Well, that's interesting. So if you were selling used books that had like notes in the margins or something, you'd be out of luck too, huh?
Yeah. For medium now, you would.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that. Well, that's.
Yeah,
I mean, that's neither here nor there.
$2.88 for medium mail versus $3.25 or $4.25. You know. Standard.
Right, and
when you add that up.
Couple thousand books a year, that's a lot.
We sent books to 37 states and I think 4 countries. So
wow.
The shipping adds up.
How many books did you end up selling in 2020, do you think?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, we're early into 2021 and I've sold close to 5,000 copies of that book.
5,000 copies, guys. So
yeah.
It's somewhere close to $100,000 in revenue then from that one book.
Yeah, if I didn't give halfway, probably 50.
Well, yeah. So we say 50. Let's say 50 to $75,000 in revenue. Obviously, you had expenses too, but
for sure.
That's pretty impressive, Kelly. So what? How are you selling this? How do you do that? What's your pitch?
Man, honestly, when I don't really have to pitch it hard because I live what I preach and I live what I sell. So
yeah.
you know what you're getting is a pretty safe bet with me. But I just spend time traveling, and then anytime I speak, I talk about how you need the book, how it's going to bless you, it's going to make you laugh, it's funny, if you like the way I talk, like listen to me speak today, if you like the way I talk, you're going to love the book. Get the book.
We did put some fun stories in there. We really did. I mean, there's some good stuff in there, guys.
The first chapter's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's one of the best life stories, and actually, I've told that one a few times, and I think... It's on my podcast, actually. I've got an episode where I shared it, and I gave you credit for it. I didn't take credit for it.
I appreciate it.
Because I asked you before I did that.
But anyone that I ask, what was your favorite part of the book, they all say the first chapter. Every
dumpster fire, yeah.
I'm like, there's no biblical teaching. It's just a principle I learned. Like, but the story's so funny. I have people send me pictures of dumpsters on fire all the time now.
Do you really? That's hilarious.
Yes. Yeah,
The first episode that I did for my podcast, it was like not even episode one, just one that I did just to kind of get it over with and get something out there, was about making trash can turkey, which is basically the equivalent of a dumpster fire Thanksgiving dinner. Because what you do is you take a turkey, you put a stick in the ground, you wrap some foil around that, you brine the turkey in salt water and like liquid smoke and brown sugar and all this good stuff, right, overnight. You take your turkey out, you shove it down on that foil, you turn a metal trash can down over this thing. My brother Tim, you know him.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like something he would do, right? So
absolutely.
You take about 20 pounds of charcoal and you mount it up on top of the can, and then you put about 4 inches of it in a wall all around the bottom of the can, and you light all of this on fire and leave it alone for about 2.5 hours. It's the best turkey you've ever eaten in your life.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, that
right.
whole concept of dumpster fires, it gets people going.
They love it.
Obviously, it was kind of a theme for last year anyway, right?
Absolutely.
Just globally, I think everybody felt like they were in a dumpster fire. Well, Kelly, so what's next, man?
You know what? I mean, we're just doing the same stuff. You know, my schedule, and I know a lot of this is thanks to the book, but my schedule is getting to where I have more offers coming in than I have weekends to go. So that was kind of the goal, you know, from 2016 when I, all this started was, that's what I was praying, actually, was God, give me more opportunities to speak than I have ability to go speak. And, that's kind of where we are now. I mean, 5 years later, but, as long as you stay consistent, and, my goal is a book every 2 years now, at least, you know, to keep coming out. So that's my goal. I want to do another book. I want to keep going, keep traveling, keep writing, keep bringing Jesus everywhere I can.
So you've been in, not just in ministry, but in secular business as well. So what would you say to somebody who is maybe, you know, they run a company, they've established themselves, got a little bit of a social media following, et cetera, and they're thinking about writing a book. What would your advice be to them?
Do it as fast as you can. Get it done. Do it right now. There's people that, they want to validate you through some other, way than just talking to you or seeing you. And so there's some reason that a book is instant validation. Just to say that, wow, you have a book like that. It makes you serious. Now, if I had a CD, I mean, I used to be in bands, you know, I used to eat music. You hand me your demo tape, like, okay, great. You know, did you record that in your garage? Whatever. Something about a book means you're willing to put time in, to put effort in, to really, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it does. It validates you, for sure.
Real quick, it puts you in a higher rank than a lot of people, because how many people can honestly say they have a book out?
Well, you even know, among public speakers, not that many. And that's kind of shocking, isn't it, for someone who uses words for a living to not have written a book. It's kind of weird that so few of them actually have, though.
Yeah, for sure. And I saw that real quick when I was starting, like, I mean, you know me, I do my due diligence, and when I was looking at traveling speakers, I could see a huge difference in the one that had a book versus the ones that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I got to you. I mean, I was in my last year of seminary when I called you to do the book. We finished it right when I was graduating, you know? So I had that right out the gate, because I knew I need this. I need that.
I want to ask you about two more things, and then I'll let you go.
Sure.
So first, what would you say, okay, so I know that beyond, you know, the income, and obviously for you, there's some ministry oriented goals in getting the book out and changes in people's lives. But other than that, in your professional life as a speaker, what has the book done for you?
Again, the book validated me, which is sad. Okay. But it did. It also opens doors, to get into places. And a lot of times if I just dropped off a business card with the church or a client or something like that, I may never hear from them. But when you take in and give them a book, well, for one, now they've just received a gift. People see that as a gift. And then two, it says, oh, man, this is a guy. And there's a picture of you. You look good on the back or whatever. And then like it's all – and you sign it, and there's this level of famous or celebrityism to it that's not true by any means when it comes to me. But people feel that way.
Right.
There's people that are like, oh my gosh, I have your book, or I saw you on a book, or that's the guy you did the book. Like, yeah, you know, so what? But it steps you up. It just raises the level of who you are. And it's at the end of the day, that's not why I'm doing it, but it works. It just works. And you need that, unfortunately. In our society today, everybody wants to be discovered instead of developed. So that it makes you discoverable.
Right. Well, yeah, it's differentiation is the term I like to use, because if you can differentiate yourself enough, even in the circles you're in, then there's no competition. So if they're looking for someone to come and speak at a type of event that you handle, you know, or if they're looking for someone with your style or someone who talks about the messages you talk about, you're kind of unique. You know, you set yourself apart. And so there's not too many guys out there that they're going to be looking at when they're trying to hire Kelly Kay, because you know, here you've got a guy who's a former bass guitarist, well, still a bass guitarist, but former rocker, you know, TV producer, insult comic, you know, just an all-around force to be reckoned with on the fringes of pop culture for a long, long time. And so when you show up, it's a whole different ball game, right? So
yeah,
that book
sure.
is going to set that apart, because the other thing we did in there was tell quite a bit of your own story. That kind of helps them to understand where you come from, so that they see what your message is all about and it has more depth to it. So, okay, last question that I want to ask you about is, in your development, like as a speaker, in the way that you think about the messaging you do, what has changed through the process of writing these two books? What did that, was there any advantage to that, do you think? Did that help or did it change anything? What was that experience?
Are you saying what changed as a speaker now because of the books?
Well, in the process of writing the books, did you gain anything from that process of putting those words into a book format like that? What was the, was there a takeaway for you personally?
It definitely has shaped a lot of the way that I write messages or talks, you know, depending on where I am. I've learned too that if you can find a common thread, that's one thing I learned through the book, because every time I went with you the book, you would try to show me this idea of finding this common thread of what ties everything together. And now when I write, that's what I'm looking for, so that I know if I write 5 or 6 messages with the same common thread, I can come to you in a minute and say, hey, here's the stuff that I've done. Can you give me a book out of these 5? And then it's done. You know, like I'm jumping steps ahead and saving a ton of time for myself. But that also helps, you know, with the audience. Because now if I want to do a series or something, or a CD series or whatever, I have that. And the book, doing the books really helped me develop that style of writing when it comes to writing talks.
Yeah. Do you find, so here's something that I get from people all the time on content production is, they're like, well, I just run out of ideas. What my take on this is, the more ideas I come up with, the more ideas I have. How do you feel about that? What's your experience?
That's really hard for me. I've never run out of ideas. My wife's always like, well, you shut up with the ideas. I just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks, man. Like I'm always constantly looking for something else. So that's a tough one for me. Yeah. I haven't ever had a problem with coming up with ideas. And now what happens is that there's like 40 books I want to do. That's the downside. And now that I've done this and it's so easy and I know how well it works, that I want to call you like once a month with a new book and like put a book out every month if we could.
Well, when you get to that stage, you let me know and I'll see if I can keep up.
Right.
I don't know.
I've been there for 2 years. We could do
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. I don't, you, like you said though, I think you have to give the audience some time to absorb what you've already put out. Now, one thing that, you were starting to work on was like some smaller stuff that was like more devotional minded or meditation minded. So it's kind of, it correlates to your larger works, but at the same time, it's stuff that people can use like in between. So it's more of a personal development type tool that you're building. And so I think that a lot of writers would do well to think about that to, sure. Write your big narrative story.
That's the name of the book. That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, really? Think about
the name
that.
Of the devotional. Yeah, think about that.
Think about that. But I think that a lot of authors would do well to think along the lines of what type of educational material can I put together, not just these bigger narrative books that I might be putting out once a year or once every 2 years, but
let me explain
what other material can I put in?
That real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I told you that I want to do a book every 2 years, and you said, yeah, they do need the time to absorb that, and you're absolutely right. And also what I learned is after about 2 years, I've exhausted that book through the places that I travel, you know, over the years. By that point, I'm not selling so many anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So what I learned was, okay, I want to keep doing that every 2 years, but I would still like to have something else, because I'll visit the same church maybe 2 times in those 2 years. Still, a lot of books are being sold, but now half the crowd already had them, half didn't. So what could I do in between every year that the people that already bought the book, well, now there's something new for them. And so in between every 2 years, I'm going to do a shorter, smaller, like you said, teaching material. So if I come out with a book every 2 years and then every year with a devotional or something smaller like that, now I have constant merch and products. Even if I return to the same place, it's continually changing and I'm always making the most out of every opportunity.
Right. And I think the same thing would be true even if, because you and I discussed with that second book, possibly putting together some marketing stuff and seeing if we could get some gigs to do some training and things. I think the same thing would be true in the corporate world with like doing conferences and conventions and, you know, keynote speaker type stuff and then corporate trainings and all that. I think the same thing would be true because you're coming out with a new concept, a new mode of operation, and then hopefully your next one is building on top of that. But at the same time, you're only going to get so many points of contact with that one person out of that material before they've kind of exhausted their interest in it. There may still be there more there for them, but they're only going to listen to you so many times before they like, you know, yeah, I heard Kelly Kay was coming again, but man, I already heard him speak twice this year. So maybe not, you know, maybe I'll just stay home and, and watch The Bachelor or whatever. So I think, yeah, there's that, but if you come and he knows they're, you've promoted yourself as bringing a new message, you've got something new to say, new topics of conversation. I think this is true no matter where you're at, whether it's, you know, preaching or whether it's just public speaking stuff.
That's true. And let me show you another side of that too. There's a group of people out there that don't read. Okay. Let's just be honest. There's people that don't, if it's not Audible or if it's not a movie, they don't want it. But those same people, if they like you, if they like you, if they like what they heard, your presentation, they will buy your book and they will never read it. But you still got your $20, didn't you?
Right.
Like, I had a guy come up to me not too long ago. He's like, dude, I bought your book last time you were here. I'm like, awesome. Did you enjoy it? He's like, I don't know. It holds my TV up. I'm like, great. You know? But at least I said, at least you see it every day. Like, you think about me every single day. And they take it home. Why? He didn't care about that book. He cared about me. And he was giving into me. He was sowing into me. And there's people that want to do that. But some people don't want to just give you money for nothing.
Right.
So when you have something to trade hands, hey, I want to give this guy some money. Okay, he's got a book. Cool. Am I going to read it? Probably not. But I want to get this guy $20 and that, I'll do that. Boom. Done.
Yep. Absolutely. And then that gets you just a little bit further down the road to keep doing what you love doing and what you hope is making a difference in people's lives. So
absolutely.
Man, thank you so much, and I didn't even say this at the beginning of this interview, Kelly and I, when this started out, this is a ghostwriting contract that he and I have, all right? So I don't, there's nothing, he mentions me in both of his books as having helped him, but I don't get any authorship credit. My name is never going on that book jacket. I'm totally cool with that. And ordinarily, a lot of my ghostwriting clients, I can never have these conversations with because, you know, that non-disclosure agreement exists there. And they want to be viewed as the author of their book, which you are the author of your book. I mean, those are things
absolutely
you came up with. But at the same time, I really appreciate you being bold enough to just step up and say, yeah, I had this guy, you know, he came in and he wordsmithed this stuff. We put it all together, but it's my material, but he helped me polish it and put it up and then I published it. So anyway, it's just cool to be able to have
this conversation. I've never tried to hide that fact.
Yeah.
You know, having a ghostwriter is actually way more common than you think. And, you know, when I learned that, I wasn't afraid of that. I wasn't scared of that. And people ask me all the time, man, how did you find the time to write a book? And I said, I didn't. Like, what do you mean? I said, well, I came up with all the material. And then I talked on the phone and somebody else wrote it down after I told them. And they're blown away by that. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's still my material. You just said it better than I did.
Exactly.
You know?
And it's funny because people tend to get skittish about that, but at the same time, no one thinks twice about the fact that, hey, you knew what kind of house you wanted, and you came up with the design, but you didn't build it yourself, you know?
No,
or
yeah,
you knew what
day,
kind of car you wanted, and you had somebody customize it for you, or whatever,
sure,
or a suit. But for some reason, when it comes to being an author, we don't feel, you know, like it's legit for people to have ownership over something that somebody else helped them create.
And there were little things. You know, you'd send me, you know, a chapter, and you would – you know, you would describe something, and I would go in and change it, and it's mine, so I was allowed to. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay. Like, do not feel bad about having a ghostwriter. I will continue to use you forever. Like, it's just, it makes my life easy. I don't have to go sit down in a coffee shop somewhere for months or years at a time to put this stuff together. That's what you do. You're good at it, and I understand that. I'm good at what I do. You're good at what you do. Let's work together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. And I know you guys are you're going to have a new baby here pretty soon. And I wish you nothing but blessings on that, man. I hope that you and your wife and everybody stays healthy. And I know you already went through COVID, so that's a little bit scary, but you got through it. And so I'm just nothing but blessings to you. And I hope that everything goes really smoothly.
Thanks, man. Same to you. I love you to death. And I can't wait to do another book with you.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop the recording. Then you and I can chat for a minute if you want to. But
sure. Yeah.
So today's free tool is an easy one. It's one that I just stumbled onto recently through using TikTok. It's one that a lot of people there use to kind of direct you to their other social media. And it is called Linktree, Linktree. And if you want to find it online, it is linktr.ee. And here's what it is. It's basically a landing page with a picture of you, your name, a very short bio, and then links to anything you want. So it can be your social media, it can be your website, it could be an email address, anything that you want to build a link to, you can put it there and you can get this for free. It will stay up forever and you can share this one link to your link tree anywhere you want to. They also create a QR code for you. And there's also a premium version that has some other benefits to it, such as tracking and different types of links you can build and share. So take a look at that, guys, because I think it's a really helpful tool. I've had about 40 people go through mine so far. I'm using it in a variety of places. You can tag it onto videos. You can put it, you know, the QR code anywhere that you share images, anywhere that you share video content, you can add that in. So it's a great way to do things. And so I hope that you enjoyed Kelly today. And if you are thinking about writing a book, get with me because I only take a limited number of clients every year. And I would love for you to be one of those. Or if you need a book coach, I'm there for that too. I can walk you through the process or talk to you about publishing, whatever you need in the book writing world. I'm here to help create 1,000 authors before I pass from this mortal coil. So I hope you enjoyed 8-second rule today, and that's it for now. You guys have got about 8 seconds to catch people's attention when you start putting out content, and I hope that you are using it wisely.